Pacific Ocean, what do you think of? Probably, I don't know, Fiji, Hawaii, New Zealand maybe, I don't know, Japan, United States. But then when I say the Indian Ocean, what do you think of then? Sri Lanka, India, is that all? Many people have got the idea that these two great oceans on which Asia borders might actually form a region and be a very powerful region indeed. Lots of shipping going on there. To talk about the Indo-Pacific idea and whether everyone's in on it, we're joined now by Priya Chacko. She's a senior lecturer at Adelaide University. Priya Chacko, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the Indo-Pacific is a big idea that everyone wants.
It seems to be. A lot of political leaders have adopted this idea.
Yeah.
Think tank types love it. However, there has been a few problems in terms of how it's been operationalised.
Okay, well, let's put the think tank types aside. They're very important, but let's go to the sort of countries involved. What are they doing?
Okay, well, Australia's been a real champion of the Indo-Pacific idea. It's adopted the term into government. DFAT uses it, Defence uses it. It's also trying to build a relationship with India, which Australia thinks is a key country in the Indo-Pacific region. Mm-hmm. India, in turn, is trying to improve its trade links and economic links with the ASEAN region, the Asia-Pacific region. It's put a higher focus on Australia as well. Countries like Japan love the Indo-Pacific idea, in particular because it brings India into the political sphere. So you can sort of see that there's a trend forming here. These are all democracies that are championing this idea. Mm-hmm. The United States in particular, under the Trump administration, has adopted the Indo-Pacific terminology and loves it as well. So the key country that's left out of these discussions, but it's the elephant in the room, is China.
Mm-hmm.
So the concern is that it's China that's integrating the Indo-Pacific region. It's involved in the Pacific Ocean politically and economically very heavily. It's involved in the Indian Ocean Rim region as well, politically and economically, through its Belt and Road Initiative. So people are worried that China is going to be setting the rules for this emerging sort of mega region.
Yeah, but does it talk about the Indo-Pacific region?
China? China refuses to use the term Indo-Pacific.
Now why? I mean, I just don't get it at the moment. You've explained that there's a pattern of the democracies being in favour of this. That's good. And that China isn't speaking about it. And yet China is, in effect, doing it.
Yes.
So why is it doing it but not speaking about it?
Well, because the term has been championed by Shinzo Abe, Japan's prime minister, but also Indian think tanks in particular, and Australian think tanks and political leaders. And China perceives this as a term that's meant to target China, to contain it in some ways, to stop China from being able to impose the types of rules and norms that it wants on the region. So it perceives the Indo-Pacific idea as being a specifically anti-China concept.
Doesn't seem that way to me. I mean, that might be an offshoot of it. Obviously, stronger regional groupings anywhere limit the power of others in any region, whether it's China or someone else. If you get groups coming together and coalescing with a common interest, they have a louder voice. You know, I think kids in primary school probably understand that in the schoolyard.
Yes, and there are people in China who say that they are the key country in the Indo-Pacific. They're the ones that are in both oceans and they are the ones that are integrating the region. So actually China should start using the Indo-Pacific term, but it's not done it officially. So it might change in the future, but at the moment it's perceived as a very political concept that's really about containing China's influence in this region.
And Indonesia's got quite a strong interest because, as I understand it, what they see as the opportunity here is a great opportunity to build trade and foreign investment in Indonesia.
Yeah, they think that India is a potentially important trading partner. They think that the Middle East can also be really important for Indonesia's development. Indonesia's very focused on building infrastructure in Indonesia, so it wants foreign investment.
Is it fair to say that while things might not have gone sort of great guns forever with Indonesia starting off with trade initiatives with ASEAN and it all going well and then tapering off, that no one should worry about that because very few relationships, and in particular trading relationships, start off, go really well, and stay that way for the rest of their life. They all have ups and downs. And, and so we shouldn't be too worried about ups and downs in any of these agreements.
In terms of ASEAN, no. Indonesia's biggest trading partners are in the Asia-Pacific region, but what Indonesia wants to do is try to build some links to the Indian Ocean Rim region, and that's not really taken off.
And India likes the idea?
India likes the idea.
Big time.
India has been trying to integrate its economy with the Asia-Pacific region and the ASEAN economies for a long time. It's had a look east policy since the 1990s. It now has an act east policy. It has a free trade agreement with ASEAN. However, it really hasn't got much out of these free trade agreements that it's got with Asia-Pacific countries. So there's been a bit of a backlash against them recently. There's also a major push in India to build up local manufacturing industries, and that's meant reimposing protectionist barriers.
I'm talking with Priya Chacko. She's a senior lecturer in international politics at the University of Adelaide, and we're talking about the Indo-Pacific. What does it mean and who recognises it? And what about the problems of the investment climate in these two countries? I don't know enough to say whether it's the same in Indonesia and India, but I do know that if I won lotto and had $1 million to invest overseas, I'd be a bit careful about both of those countries.
Yeah, certainly the investment has not come flooding in. India has improved its ease of doing business ranking recently. It has gotten a lot of commitments to increase investment. However, it really hasn't turned into concrete developments, particularly from countries in the Pacific region. The country that is investing in India increasingly is China, interestingly, and the country that's investing in Indonesia is China. So again, it's really China that's at the heart of this regional integration.
You mentioned earlier that it was Shinzo Abe that first coined the term. Is that a desire by Japan, its interest in this, to be a part of another group that has some power in the region and therefore to keep some sort of balance within the region in terms of power plays?
Yes, I would say that that's an accurate perception. Japan is actually the biggest investor in infrastructure in South Asia, for instance. It's investing much more money, in fact, than China is at the moment in infrastructure building. And it's particularly targeted India to try to bring India into Asia-Pacific institutions and try to get India to conform to existing norms and rules in the region. And clearly that is an attempt to balance out China's power in the region.
So maybe China's entitled to feel a little bit.
I think it is, yeah. When you look at the sorts of countries that are adopting this term, the United States, Japan, Australia, these are the countries that have gotten a lot out of having a US-dominated and led rules-based order in the Asia-Pacific region. And they want to preserve the status quo in that sense. They want to preserve the rules that have served them well. It's understandable from both sides. So it's understandable that China can get a little bit offended by this as well, because it has genuine grievances with how US power has been projected in the region.
I get that, although I don't mean to be sort of unforgiving of the Chinese having that attitude, but you know, they're pretty realistic. You'd think that they'd understand that, you know, there's a lot in this for countries like Indonesia and India and other countries in the region. So why wouldn't they support this and go for it in their own interest, not in some, you know, geopolitical power play thing?
Look, I think they are, and they are implicitly supporting it by investing quite a lot of money in these two regions. They're just not buying into the terminology, the idea that we're going to create a rules-based order. They just don't buy into that language because it doesn't suit them. So they are implicitly adopting this idea of regional integration in the Indo-Pacific region. They're just not adopting the formal terminology.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So everyone's on the same boat. They just don't call the boat the same thing.
No, and there are some issues that need to be sorted out. So what are the rules going to be? What are the norms going to be? China just doesn't want the United States, Japan, and Australia to be enforcing the status quo which they think is unjust toward China. And to an extent, India doesn't buy into the rules as they exist either, and neither does Indonesia.
What sort of rules would China, India and Indonesia want changed?
Well, this is a good question because no one actually has specified what the rules are that Australia, Japan and the US are actually defending. There's some sort of vague commitment to free trade, but what does that mean? Free trade means quite different things in the United States, Japan and Australia.
Right, and under the Trump administration particularly.
Right, so actually it's in everyone's interests to start from scratch and actually think about the rules that we want. So instead of insisting on a rules-based order and never actually defining what the rules are, perhaps we should be a little bit more conciliatory in how we approach this concept.
Mm. Well, look, this is not my field, so this is the voice of ignorance speaking, but from the outside, which can often offer some sort of clarity, getting away from the trees, I look at the big institutions like the World Bank, the IMF, the WTO, and I think, well, how long do you guys think you can keep excluding really strong emerging economies and just dictate to everyone else how things are going to run?
Yeah.
It's just not smart. I mean, if you have any group, forget some sort of world order, just look at a normal group. If you see people growing up capable of being a part of the group, you don't invite them in, you've got to expect trouble.
Yeah, that's right. And we've already seen a move away from those institutions. So now instead of looking at a global multilateral trading system, we're starting to see the emergence of preferential trading systems in different regions. So in Indo-Pacific region, it's now the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership that's being negotiated. We have the Trans-Pacific Partnership now. Both of those agreements actually challenge, you know, WTO processes, World Trade Organization processes. We're starting to see the emergence of the Asian Infrastructure Bank as well, which is going to challenge the influence that the World Bank and the IMF has.
Okay, so I think we've got it. When we think of the Pacific, we should think a lot more than many Australians do, which is a holiday. And when we think of the Indian Ocean, a lot more than, well, India, Sri Lanka. We've got to smarten our act up and get this Indo-Pacific lingo in our head. And once that's in our head, the full impact of what that would mean if we could get the countries there to really work together as a region and have the full force that would come from that. That'd be a good thing, I think. But anyway, that's only my view. We've been talking with Priya Charko, Senior Lecturer in International Politics at the Department of Politics and International Studies at the University of Adelaide. Thanks very much, Priya.
Thank you for having me.